Okay, good afternoon. My name is Molly Mayer, and I'm the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. A few reminders before we get started. We have several upcoming professional development opportunities, including four more webinars in our Strand 10 series, which we're starting today. More information and registration information can be found on our webpage. It's nysrti.org. A copy of today's PowerPoint and materials are available on our web page as well under Professional Development and then under Webinars. At the end of today's webinar, we'll post a link to a brief evaluation. If you could please take a few minutes to respond, we would greatly appreciate it. And during today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments you may have. And last reminder, I see Susan has typed a question about certificates. So the answer there is, following today's webinar, you will get an email thank you that most districts accept. If that is not sufficient, you can email me. I will put my email address in the chat in just a minute. You can email me for a more formal certificate. But again, most districts do accept the email thank you that says you have attended. So hopefully that answers that for you, Susan. We are very pleased today to have Dr. Kristen McMaster with us for our Strand 10 series, Using Peer-Assisted Learning Strategies as a Class-Wide Intervention in Grades 2 through 6. Today's topic is PALS Overview and Implementation Issues. Dr. McMaster is a professor of special education at the University of Minnesota. She received her PhD in special education from Vanderbilt University. Her research interests include assessment and intervention for children who struggle with reading and written expression. It is my pleasure to welcome Dr. McMaster today.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Kristen. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm on my speakerphone. If you're having trouble hearing me, just feel free to put a message in the chat and I'll just pick up the phone. But I'm very excited to have the opportunity to do this webinar series with you. We're trying something a little bit new and different, at least it's new and different to me, but I hope you'll find it to be beneficial. What we're doing is we're offering the PALS training, which I usually do in just one sitting, as a five-part series. So you'll be introduced to a different aspect of PALS each week, or every 2 weeks, that is, and then you'll have an opportunity to try the piece out that you learned in the webinar session in your classroom. Then you'll have a chance to come back with questions about the process so far, as well as to learn about the next component. So I'm really hopeful that this process helps you start PALS up in your classrooms with fidelity and with success. I look forward to your feedback about it, and certainly there will be lots of opportunities for your questions. Now, before we get started, on your screens, you should see two polls, and some of you are already answering that. I'd be really interested to know who you are, whether you're a classroom teacher, an ELL specialist, a reading specialist, an administrator. You can see all the different options there. And then also if you could let me know what you know about PALS, if anything, if you have any experience or some knowledge. And I see that there is quite a bit of knowledge and a little bit of experience, so that's great. Let's just give that another few seconds to fill out. Looks like some classroom teachers and then quite a few elementary interventionists, a couple of special ed teachers, literacy coach and a principal, others. If you'd like to state what kind of other you are, please feel free to put that in the chat. All right. Well, it's good to see there's some knowledge of PALS, and I am quite open to questions as we go, so as you think of things, feel free to put that in the chat. I'll try to answer it as I'm talking, otherwise I'll come back to it at a point that makes sense. All right, so before we get started on the actual content, I also wanted to mention that all of the information in this presentation comes from the 2008 revised edition of the PALS manual for reading in grades 2 through 6. Okay, yes, I see another chairperson of Committee on Special Ed. Thanks for adding that. So if you have this manual, that's great. If you don't, I do encourage you to obtain a copy of it because it really has everything that you need to know to be able to implement PALS with fidelity. And I'll share some more information about how to access the manual at the end of this session. So here are the objectives for today's session. What I'm hoping is that by the end of today's session, you'll be able to describe PALS and some of the research that supports it. You'll be able to identify some of the benefits of PALS and the PALS components and activities, although we'll get into more detail about those a little bit later in this series. I'll at least go over what the basic activities are. You'll learn to pair your students together and make PALS seating arrangements so that PALS will run smoothly in your classroom. You'll learn to schedule PALS, and you'll learn to prepare PALS materials and select appropriate text for the reading activities during PALS. So just to start with a little overview, first of all, what is PALS? Well, probably quite a few of you know, since you indicated you know something about PALS, but basically it stands for Peer Assisted Learning Strategies, and really it's that simple. PALS is a process that makes use of one of the most abundant resources we have in schools and classrooms, which is the students themselves. So students are paired together with each other in a classroom. They're same age, same grade peers, and they work together on learning strategies that are designed to help them improve their academic skills. So we'll be talking about PALS in reading, but there's also PALS in math. There's PALS for grades 2 through 6. There's also PALS in kindergarten and first grade, and there's a high school version of PALS. And what's common across all of the PALS programs is that rather than working on just a set of skills on a certain amount of content, kids learn strategies that they can apply to pretty much any reading material that they encounter. So the idea is that they learn strategies that can help them be successful beyond the actual PALS activities. And PALS is a class-wide peer tutoring program, so it's designed to include all of the classroom or all of the children that are in a general education classroom, and kids are paired such that there is a stronger reader paired with a weaker reader, and the stronger reader is always the first reader, and the weaker reader is always the second reader. But the second reader or the weaker reader has a very important job, which is to be the coach. So there's two roles during PALS, coach and reader. The reader reads and responds to the coach. The coach gives prompts and feedback as they're working together. And both of those jobs are reciprocal. So every activity that students do during PALS, both kids get a chance to do both jobs. And I'll explain how that works a little bit more later. So another important aspect of PALS is that it's a supplement to core reading instruction, so it's not really a standalone curriculum. It's not a certain set of content with a specific scope and sequence. It's really designed to be a way for kids to practice important reading skills that are covered in other aspects of reading instruction. So it's a supplement. It's not a standalone program. That's an important thing to understand about PALS. Now, for grades 2 through 6 in reading, the focus is on reading fluency and, of course, comprehension. So one of the ultimate goals of reading is understanding and learning from text. So there's a big emphasis on comprehension in this version of PALS. In earlier versions of PALS, there's kindergarten and first grade versions, as I mentioned. The focus is more on decoding, letter sound recognition, phonemic awareness, building fluency. But from grades 2 through 6, and actually the high school version, focus more on fluency and comprehension. So it's really designed for kids who are reading some level of connected text. So I'll share some of the PALS research with you in just a moment, but I'd like to just talk a little bit about why we think PALS has experienced success in research. So this picture kind of illustrates part of why we think PALS works. So when you have the snake and the funny-looking bird and the turtle and the elephant all going to the one-size-fits-all store, when they all buy their T-shirt, do they all come away happy? Probably not so much. And that's kind of The same thing for PALS. In classrooms, let's say you're a third grade teacher or working with third grade students, in a general ed classroom, you might have kids reading at a first grade level or below, all the way up to a fifth grade level or above, and that's quite a range of diversity to address all in one class, especially if you have 25 or 30 students with whom you're working. So PALS was really designed to accommodate diversity in the classroom by giving teachers a way to differentiate instruction and kind of deliver their instruction in a different way than you might typically do. So students can read texts at the right level because they'll be working with a partner. The teacher can select reading material that is leveled for the weaker reader in the pair so that they're really working at their instructional level, a level where they might need a little bit of help, but they can experience a lot of success and get a lot of productive time practicing. And I'll talk in a few minutes about how we go about selecting appropriate reading texts for students. The other thing is students get help when they need it. So when students work with a partner, at the very beginning of PALS, the teacher will train the students how to work together in this coach and reader relationship. They learn the different prompts that they'll give each other, and they learn how to correct each other and when to correct each other. And that's really important because when students make mistakes when they're reading, we know that if they don't get immediate feedback and corrective help, they will continue to practice essentially the wrong information. And the more you practice things in an inaccurate way, the more difficult it is to correct that later on. But when you have a partner sitting there and listening to you and helping you as soon as you need it, then you're more likely to be an accurate reader. So that's an important part of the differentiation of PALS. Another reason why we think PALS works is just that students practice reading a lot. So we'll talk later about how often you do PALS, but essentially it's 3 times a week for about 35 to 40 minutes. And after students are trained to do PALS, they really know what they're supposed to do. There's a very specific structure. The structure and procedures don't really change once kids have learned how to do them. So they can really focus on the business of reading rather than trying to figure out what it is they're supposed to be doing at any given time. So there's structure. The structure is very efficient. There's not a lot of time transitioning between activities. Most of the time is spent either reading or listening to your partner read or asking comprehension questions and talking about the reading material. So those routines stay the same throughout the program. Kids learn to do them. And once they become proficient at those, they can really stay on task and get a lot of reading done. And I think that's just so critical. I've spent a lot of time in elementary classrooms, especially in fourth grade, and a lot of times during, say, independent reading time, some kids are reading independently, but a lot of students aren't really reading. They're doing other things, and this is just one way to get kids really engaged in reading and getting a lot of the practice that they need to be successful and to improve their reading skills. So I referred to a little bit of research, so I'll talk about that for a few minutes here. So these two folks are Doug and Lynn Fuchs. They're at Vanderbilt University. They were my mentors when I was a graduate student there. I spent a lot of time. They had actually already developed PALS for grades 2 through 6, and they were just beginning to develop kindergarten and first grade PALS when I was a student there at Vanderbilt. And so I got a chance to be involved in their research and spend a lot of time in PALS classrooms with teachers who were implementing PALS and really learned a lot from that. But Doug and Lynn Fuchs and their colleagues have been doing this work for more than 15 years. And they've done some of the work in Nashville, Tennessee. Their students and others have gone on and done additional research on PALS at their own institutions. And generally, what's been found across this research are effects for students, positive effects favoring PALS, for students from a wide variety of different settings, so from more high-poverty schools to middle-class schools, for kids in urban, suburban, and rural settings, kids of a variety of skill levels, so high, average, and low-achieving students. And there's always been an effort in PALS research to kind of disaggregate the data for different levels of learners so we can answer the question of, you know, is this going to be beneficial for my higher performing readers as well as for my average and lower performing readers. So kids at all levels have appeared to benefit from PALS. Kids with disabilities who are included in the general education classroom for their reading instruction, and then kids learning English as a second language. So quite a range of different types of learners have appeared to benefit from PALS. With that said, I would never say that any intervention is going to work for all students. I wouldn't say this is the cure for all reading problems, but definitely has broad effects. And what I would say is if you're doing PALS, it's a great idea to be monitoring student progress, particularly for kids who you're concerned about, who might have been identified as at risk for later reading difficulties, just to make sure that it is having the intended effect, and when it's not, to consider what kinds of changes might be needed for those students. Now, all of this research that I've mentioned follows a basic model where we start with the idea. So PALS sounds like a good idea. Let's test it out. So the Fuchs and their colleagues have tested PALS in classrooms, and one fairly unique thing about PALS compared to other interventions in research is that classroom teachers have always been the ones to implement PALS, even in the research study. So instead of some researcher or graduate student implementing PALS, it's been a real teacher who understands kids in classrooms and has been able to give us feedback about how well PALS fits into their day, into their instructional program, their curriculum, and so forth. So teachers have given a lot of feedback. They've come up with some of the ideas for components of PALS. For example, you'll see a point sheet a little bit later on. That was the idea of one of the teachers who was in the early research. So a lot of really important feedback just to make sure this is a program that people can actually use and isn't just going to sit on the shelf gathering dust. So we test that out. We gather the feedback. We also gather data from students, so important reading outcomes that we'd like to see improve as a result of PALS. And then based on that data and the feedback, we make revisions, have a new version of PALS, and test that again. So PALS has gone through this sort of iterative process of development and testing over the 15-plus years that I mentioned. Here are some results for some of the early research that was done back in the 1990s. The Fuchs and their colleagues had just developed PALS for kids in grades 2 through 6, and they tested it out in about 30 classrooms at those grade levels in Nashville public schools. And they implemented PALS for about 16 weeks. And they looked at the improvement that kids made in terms of reading fluency. Now, the measure that they gave was an oral reading passage where kids read aloud. They read aloud for 3 minutes. And the bars that you see in this graph show their gain that they made over 16 weeks. I'm going to see if I can use this pointing tool. Okay, so the light blue bars here are kids who were in PALS classrooms, and the dark blue bars are kids who were in control classrooms. Now, I should mention that all of the classrooms that were in this study were randomly assigned to either do PALS or be in the control group. So they didn't get to choose. They were randomly assigned, and that's really important because let's say all of you on this webinar today were invited to be in a PALS study, and I said, well, if you want to do PALS, you can volunteer, and if you don't want to do PALS, you don't have to. And then we tested the effects of PALS. Well, if we found out that PALS or the PALS group outperformed the control group, we wouldn't really know if that was because of PALS or if it was something else about the teachers who volunteered. So maybe the teachers who volunteered just are really motivated and want to try something new, and there's just something different about those teachers. So if we did the study that way, then it would be hard to interpret our results. It would be hard to say it was PALS that led to improvement. But if we randomly assign teachers, then essentially there's equal chance of people being really motivated or not so motivated or not so sure, or whatever other variables are important would be spread out across the PALS and the control group. And that's been true in the majority of PALS research. So anyway, back to this graph, what you see here on the y-axis here, again, is the gain that kids made over 16 weeks. And then we have kids of different learner types, so kids with learning disabilities who are included in the general ed classroom, kids who are low achieving, average, and high achieving in terms of reading. And what we see is a larger gain for the kids who are in PALS classroom compared to kids in the control classroom. And those gains were statistically significant, but also fairly distinct. So almost 50 word gain in the 3 minutes compared to almost a 30 word gain for kids with learning disabilities. And that same pattern you can see for low, average, and high performing students. So that was a good result from that original research. But fluency isn't the only thing we're interested in. They also looked at reading comprehension. And again, we see a similar pattern on this measure. They read a passage aloud, and then they answered 10 comprehension questions. This again is the gain that they made over 16 weeks. So those 10 comprehension questions were both literal and inferential questions. Again, we see the kids in the PALS group, regardless of their learner type, outperformed controls on the comprehension measure. Get rid of this arrow. All right. Now, more recently, we did a large-scale study in Minneapolis, Nashville, and also in Hidalgo County in South Texas, in a large-scale study to kind of look at the effects of PALS when it scaled up beyond the original research site, which was Nashville, Tennessee. So this study was conducted around 2007 to 2009. What we had in that study were teachers across all three states who, again, were randomly assigned to either be PALS teachers or control teachers. They did PALS for actually 2 years, and this is the second year of data. What we see here, and I'm only showing part of the graph for now, is the yellow bar are kids. It's actually showing an effect size. So an effect size basically shows how two groups compare, and you can think of it in terms of standard deviation. So an effect size of 0.25 is a modest, but it was a statistically significant difference between PALS and controls. And this is on an aggregate of reading comprehension, vocabulary, and decoding skills. And fluency was in there as well. So again, we saw an effect of 0.25. This is indicating that students who received PALS outperformed controls on that reading measure. The maroon bar are low-performing students broken out. Gray are average-performing students. And black are high-performing students. So again, a statistically significant and I'd say meaningful effect size from that more recent research as well. There's more to the story. I'll probably share that with you a little bit later on, just to give you a little teaser there. But again, that's just to give you some evidence of PALS so far. So I've just said a lot about the background of PALS and some of the research. I'll pause for a minute and see if anybody wants to pop a question in. Otherwise, I'll keep going. All right. Okay. So in general, what we've concluded from research is that PALS students tend to outperform controls on important reading outcomes. One thing, though, that we've learned in this work also is that PALS works best when it's done with fidelity. And what I mean by fidelity is when you do it by the book, so to speak, when you do it the way that it was designed. Because anytime you take a research-based program or intervention and you don't do it with fidelity, you change certain aspects of it, it becomes less sure whether you will have similar results as those that we found in research, just because you're changing it and then it's something different. It's not really PALS anymore. So what I would strongly suggest is that as you're learning PALS, you read the manual carefully. You follow the procedures that we talk about in the webinar. You use the materials that I'll talk about. Those kinds of things will help ensure that you're doing PALS with fidelity, and then when you look at your student outcomes, you can really interpret them based on whether you actually did PALS or not. So that's an important piece. The other thing that we found in research is that PALS works best when students receive a full dose. And by that, I just mean when they get the whole program. PALS is typically done 3 times a week for 35 to 40 minutes. We always recommend that you at least do it for the amount of time that we've done it during the research study, so 16 to 18 weeks. You can certainly do it beyond then. But that's what we would consider a full dose. And there's some evidence that when students miss a lot of PALS session or it's not done on a regular basis, then they're not as likely to experience the same kinds of achievement gains as if they did receive the full dose. So that's just another thing to keep in mind as you're implementing PALS. So we're going to move on now to some basics of PALS. I'll talk very briefly about the 4 activities, and then we'll spend the rest of the time talking about how you would get PALS, kind of get organized to do PALS in your classroom. That way, a lot of those questions are answered so that next time when we start doing the activities, you'll kind of understand what the setup piece is like. So the 4 PALS activities are as follows. First, there's always 10 minutes of partner reading, and that's an activity where students are paired together. There's the first reader and the second reader that I mentioned before. And the first reader will read from text for 5 minutes while their partner, their coach, follows along, listens to them reading, gives corrective feedback using a very specific correction procedure, which you'll learn about next time. So they do that for 5 minutes. And then they switch jobs, and the weaker reader goes back and reads the same text for 5 minutes. So they each get a chance to read, they each get a chance to coach, and it takes a total of 10 minutes. Reading the same segment of text. After that 10 minutes, right away, the second reader will retell what they just read. So the coach, who is the first reader, will ask, what did you learn first, or what happened first, what happened next, and so on until the second reader has retold all of the text that they've read so far. Then, after that, they're still with their partner. This is all done in one session. They'll move on to paragraph shrinking. And in paragraph shrinking, the first reader now reads again. They have 5 minutes, and they'll continue on where the second reader left off, same text, but they'll read new text, so they're moving on from where the second reader left off. After every paragraph, they will stop, and they will shrink the paragraph by basically saying the main who or what that's in the paragraph, telling the most important thing about that who or what, and then saying the main idea in 10 words or less. So paragraph shrinking really forces them to create a concise summary of the most important idea in each paragraph. So they read and shrink paragraphs for 10 minutes. After that, they switch jobs, and the second reader reads on. And now the second reader reads new text for 5 minutes, shrinking each paragraph as they read. And finally, at the end of the session for prediction relay, they have 10 more minutes where the first reader, again, will read for 5 minutes. And this time, they'll first make a prediction about what they think will happen next. They read about a half page. They stop, and they talk about whether their prediction came true. And then they continue on. And they do that for 5 minutes, after which point they switch jobs. The second reader now does the same thing. They make a prediction, they read half a page, they stop and check, and so on for their remaining 5 minutes. So that's a whole PALS session. Once kids learn to do all of those activities, it takes about 35, 40 minutes if you put in transitions and things. So all of those activities, though, are designed to be done in one sitting with whatever text the students are reading, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Now, throughout this time, there's a point system to keep kids motivated. So students are marking points for different things that they're doing, like reading sentences correctly or retelling things in sequence or shrinking paragraphs or making predictions. So they earn points, which they keep track of themselves. But also the teacher can award points. So while kids are reading, the teacher would be walking around and listening to the partners reading, making sure that kids are helping each other and being good coaches, that they're reading with expression and doing a good job with their retells and their paragraph summaries and so forth. So the teacher can also give points to reinforce particular behaviors that they're looking for during that session. So we have a question here saying the reading that we pick must be long enough for them to read, but also be able to make a prediction. And that's correct. So a lot of times, and we'll talk more about the reading material a little bit later, but kids might be reading from chapter books. If they're in second grade, they might not quite be there yet. They might be reading trade books. And you can adjust the amount that they're reading and predicting. But yes, it should be a text where they can actually engage enough in the text to be able to make predictions. So really short texts are probably not going to be appropriate. And again, so the kids who are participating should be able to read some level of connected text. If they're not really reading extended text at this point, then it might be more appropriate to have them working on decoding and fluency kinds of activities. So that was a really quick summary of the basic elements. It's not enough for you to really know exactly how it works. We will get into each of these activities over the next several sessions. So in 2 weeks from now, we'll talk about partner reading and retell in depth. Then we'll talk about paragraph shrinking. And then we'll do prediction relay at the very end. And I'll go into a lot of depth about what each of those activities look like and what the specific procedures and materials are. So we will get to those, but not today. Anita asks, are you always looking for main idea during shrinking, or would you use this for other comprehension strategies? So yes, we're always looking for main idea as part of the paragraph shrinking piece. And I'll talk about that more a little bit later, but paragraph shrinking is really considered to be one of the core elements of PALS. Partner reading and paragraph shrinking, in some of the research that's gone beyond the work that the Fuchs did, there have been researchers who have shown that partner reading and paragraph shrinking, which is focusing on main idea, are really essential components to PALS and kind of explain some of its effectiveness. So those are critical skills that we work on. There is some opportunity to add some other comprehension strategies, but I'll probably talk about that at the very end because I want to be sure we get into the kind of the basics before we get there. That's a good question. Okay, so you might be wondering how you're going to go about putting pairs together for PALS. So again, in your classroom, it would be all of the students who are in there, and PALS is really designed to be inclusive, so it's best when it's done at a time of day that most, if not all, students are in the classroom. I know that gets tricky when kids are being pulled for various other services, but really, you know, English language learners, kids with disabilities, generally can be successful when they're included in PALS, and so I would encourage you to try to do it at a time when all kids can participate. So the way that pairs are assigned is we start by rank ordering the whole class in terms of their reading skill level. So you could use recent data that have been collected, might be district level data, might be progress monitoring data, other reading information that you collect for your instruction. But that data would be used to rank order students from your top readers to your lowest performing readers. And you can make adjustments to that. So if you make your rank ordered list based on data and you have some sort of professional insight about certain kids, you can certainly make adjustments. So there's not really a hard and fast science to this, but we just want a general idea of our stronger readers down to our weaker readers. Once you have made that list, you split the list in half as we have here. So we have higher performing readers, or HPs, and lower performing readers, or LPs. And then you're going to pair the top student from each list with the together. So the top high performing reader would be paired with the top low performing reader. And so you do that and go all the way down the list so that each of these pairs go together. So this is pair A, pair B, C, and so on, all the way down to H. And yes, Tricia asks, would you focus on fluency or comprehension? I would tend to use fluency data just because it's normally easier to get and a pretty good indicator of kids' general reading proficiency. You could certainly use comprehension information, and that might give you a little bit more insight as to who would be a good match with each other. But fluency data would be perfectly acceptable to use, and I think would be quite accurate. Again, you can make adjustments to the pairs. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is let's say you put these pairs together and you realize, ooh, top HP and top LP are not a good match because of social issues or behavioral issues, other information that you have about the students. You could certainly change the pairing so that this child is paired with this child. That's perfectly fine to do. So it's a mix of using data and your own professional judgment to make your pairs. And again, so we want to use the pairing system flexibly. So generally speaking, we want a higher performing reader paired with a lower performing reader so that they can help each other. But the difference between the two students in a pair shouldn't be too great. So that's why we have the top high performing reader paired with the top low performing reader and not the top high performer with the very bottom low performer. If we did that, there would just be too big of a gap between students. It would be hard to find reading material that is both at the weaker reader's level but also appropriate for the stronger reader. And they might just get very frustrated. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes your top high performing reader is, you know, wants to be a teacher when they grow up, and they might have really great skills for working with a low performing student, but that's not a typical scenario. So it just works better when there's some gap, like here, but not too wide of a gap between the pairs. And it's also good to think about pair dynamics. So using your intuition, your opinion of both their reading and their ability to cooperate with each other, and feel free to make changes if things don't work out right away. Generally speaking, pairs work together for about 4 weeks, and then you can go back and repair them. It could be that, you know, if you collect some more data after about a month, kids move around in their rank order. Plus, after you've done PALS for several weeks, you start to get a good idea of who the good coaches are and who needs those good coaches. So it's definitely, again, you know, part art and part science in pairing kids together. In the PALS manual, there's a variety of materials like this one. This is the Pairs and Teams Assignments chart, and this is just a handy little chart that you can make a copy of and list your first and second readers. You can assign them folders, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. They'll be on Teams, so you can use this to add up their points. It's nice to post things like this in your classroom. It shows that PALS is an important part of your instruction, and kids are interested to know who their partners are, and it's especially exciting after the 4 weeks when you change the partners up. It's just exciting to see who your new partner is going to be. So materials like this are in the manual and can certainly be duplicated and used for your classroom. And then in terms of managing pairs, again, stay flexible. If you need to move kids around, that's okay. It is a nice idea to give a pair at least a week to get along. Sometimes kids surprise us, so there might be a child who doesn't tend to work well with others, but maybe in a more structured situation where they also get to be the coach sometimes is enough to kind of help them do well in the situation. So if you can, I would give kids some time to get along, but don't feel like you have to live with something that's not working well. You can change pairs before the 4 weeks are up. Yes, so the manual is not included in the website. I will give you, on the last slide, I believe, I have the link to the PALS website at Vanderbilt. The manual is $40. They basically sell them from Vanderbilt at cost. And again, you know, I do encourage that you purchase one. You can always buy one and share. There's materials in there to reproduce. There's scripts that help you train your students to do PALS. So, yep, I'll give you that info at the end. So you might also be thinking, well, I have an odd number of students in my class, or a lot of times my kids are absent. What do you do if you have an odd number of students? And it is quite possible and appropriate to use triads. So if you have an odd number, you can make a group of three, or if on a particular day a child is absent, you could put their present partner with another pair. The important thing to keep in mind with a triad is that they should be fairly average to high performing students. So don't use the kids from the bottom of the list. And that's just because it's easy to fall through the cracks, I think, when you're a struggling reader and you're working with two other kids. And that's basically because in a pair, each kid gets half of the time to read, whereas in a triad, each student only reads for a third of the time. And it's just a little bit more difficult to manage attention and behavior, especially if you have kids who are already having difficulty with those things. So I would try to avoid putting kids with disabilities or kids who are struggling for some reason in a triad. Now, here's one sort of example of what triads might look like. So let's say you've got these three kiddos, Scooter, McGee, Chef Boyardee, and Claude Paris, and they're all sitting at their table. It's a good idea to put them at a corner because the materials are shared. So have the materials placed such that all students can see them. And because there are basically three activities, there are four, but we usually put retell together with partner reading, you can rotate their roles so that each kid gets a chance to do each job across the three activities. So for partner reading and retell in this example, Scooter is the coach, Chef is the first reader, and Claude is the second reader. So Scooter would only be giving the prompts and the correction, Chef and Claude would take turns reading. And then when it's time for paragraph shrinking, we shift around. So Chef becomes the coach, Claude becomes the first reader, and Scooter becomes the second reader. So for paragraph shrinking, Chef is just giving all the prompts, Claude gets to read and shrink for the first 5 minutes, and Scooter gets to read and shrink for the second 5 minutes. And then for the last activity, prediction relay, we shift again, Claude becomes the coach, Scooter is the first reader, and Chef is the second reader. And you could even make little cards so that when it's their turn to be coach or first reader or second reader, they actually have a physical card saying this is who you are. There's also a worksheet in the manual that you can use to write the kids' names in for the different activities. So some of those kinds of things help make the triad interaction a little bit more concrete for students. So I mentioned a little bit earlier that in addition to pairs, we have teams. So each pair is placed on a team, one of two teams, and their points that they earn during PALS, for every activity they're earning points, those accumulate towards a team total. So at the end of each week, the pairs will report their points to you, and you would total those up. Second place team could just get applause. The winning team might get to take a bow. So they don't really get anything for the points, but it's just something to kind of motivate them. Kids generally love the points. Sometimes I use the points in my college-level classes, and people love them there. They don't really mean much, but they just are a way to motivate kids. So I'll go back to the pairs and teams assignment chart, and you can see there's a place there for you to add up their points and record those at the end of the week if you wanted to do that. All right. Now, when we put teams together, we want to make sure that they're fair. So let's say that this is a picture of teams. So the blue pairs are on the blue team and the gold pairs are on the gold team. What's wrong with this? Why isn't this fair? Just let you think about that for a minute. And basically the answer is that the blue team is a little bit higher performing than the gold team. So if we did it this way, the blue team is always just slightly higher in their performance, whereas we have the slightly lower groups on the orange team or the gold team. A more fair way of doing it would be to have the very top and the very lowest performing pairs in the middle on one team and then the gold students on the other team. So that way the pairs are more balanced. So we balance the pairs. So in that scenario, A, D, E, and H are one team. B, C, F, and G are the other team. If there is an odd number of teams, which could happen, you could just have it so that at the end of the week when kids add up their points, the highest pair gives their points to both teams. So let's say pair A had the highest number of points, they could share their points with both teams. And that way, they're automatically on the winning team, and we can see how the other teams came out. Now, seating arrangements are something to think about before you get PALS up and running in the classroom, because PALS does require some reorganization, perhaps, of how kids are usually sitting in the classroom. So one way that you can do this is just to assign partners to sit together all of the time. So if all of your kids are in the class with you and all for the whole day, or if you're supporting a teacher where kids are there for the whole day, it might just be that for 4 weeks they just sit next to the child who's going to be their partner. And this eliminates the need for any kind of movement before and after each PAL session, so it might cut down on some transition time. So some teachers like to do it that way. Otherwise, you could just have one student be the mover and one be the stayer. So that way, only half of the classroom is moving when it's time to move for PALS rather than the entire class. And the child who moves can pick up the materials on their way. So I'll show you the materials in a few minutes. But they'll be getting a folder and a pencil and a book, so the mover can go get those materials, and they can join their partner. Otherwise, it's fine to have everybody move. Just know that that's going to be a lot of movement, and it might take a little bit more time. In any case, I would strongly advise having pre-established PALS spots so that kids always know where they're going to go for PALS, and that's never something that needs to be figured out each time you do PALS. I've been in classrooms where teachers kind of make a game of it when it's time to move, especially during training, where they might set their timer and say, okay, let's see if you can all move to your PALS places in 1 minute or less. And kids can certainly do that. They can move quickly, they can move quietly if they learn that that's the expectation. So I would strongly encourage you to practice moving and make sure kids can do it really quickly, and that will cut down on some transition time for you. I've mentioned a couple times that PALS in the research has been done 3 times per week, and that's really the recommended number of times. I know sometimes school schedules get a little bit difficult to work around, especially as you get to later grades. So in high school, PALS, teachers did PALS twice a week, but generally I would advise 3 times per week. As I mentioned before, it takes about 35 to 45 minutes per session, especially once you have all of the activities in place. And then plan to do PALS for at least 16 to 18 weeks. That's how long PALS has been done in the research, and that's where we can say students have had a sufficient dose where we would expect them to experience some benefits from PALS. They might experience benefit earlier than that, but we don't have empirical data to support that. The other piece about scheduling PALS is that I strongly recommend scheduling at a regular time, so the same time each day, same days each week. That way, kids just know it's part of the routine. It might make it easier when you're working around pull-out schedules if that's an issue. Just make it part of the routine, and that way kids just get used to the idea that this is PALS time and this is what we do. Now, you might be wondering, so when do teachers fit this in? And so just some of my experiences are that teachers either replace part of their teacher-directed instruction, so if the PALS activities are somewhat redundant with other things that you would normally do, it could be just part of that reading block time. Teachers have often replaced independent seat work time, where you might be expecting kids to read independently. This is a great way to ensure that they are engaged in reading appropriate text. Or during your regular reading instruction time, if that's similar to number one. Some teachers have done PALS during their content area instruction, so like during science or history. PALS can be done with content text, and when we get into the specific activities over the next few weeks, I can talk with you about what that might look like, but it can be done with science, history, other kinds of content area text, so you could do it during that instruction if there's important reading material for kids to be reading. Another thing, in addition to scheduling PALS, is thinking about how you'll set up your classroom. It's nice if you have the wall space to have a little display of PALS, like on a bulletin board, and that's where you could put your pairs and teams assignment chart so kids can see who their partners are. There are PALS rules, which I'll show you the next time that we have a webinar. There's a scoreboard for you to record the weekly scores of students. So it's nice to have a display that, again, kind of reinforces that PALS is important. It's something that we do as part of our routine. So having that display can be a nice touch. And then, of course, you'll have PALS materials. So for you, the teacher, the materials would include a timer, the PALS rules, which, again, I'll show you next week, the student assignment chart with their partners, scripts for training, so in the manual. There are several scripted lessons that tell you everything you need to know to teach your students how to do PALS. There are also other training materials in there, so there's little example stories that you can use during training. There's some little exercises in there, so those are all available in the manual. And then some sort of writing implement so that you can mark points as you're monitoring and listening to your students. The student materials would include a book, which is not included as part of PALS, so you get to select the reading materials. PALS bookmark, there's point sheets, a question card that has the prompts for each activity, a correction card that shows students how to correct each other. They'll need a pencil for marking points and a folder to keep the materials in. And I have a picture here of those materials. So here I would just recommend a two-pocket folder. And then the correction card, it's nice to have it printed on cardstock so it's fairly sturdy. And I like to color code them so they know to pull out the red correction card to correct each other and the yellow question card for the prompts. And then they have a point sheet, a pencil for marking points, and there's a template for PALS bookmarks, which you can print on cardstock and cut out so kids can have a bookmark. Now, all of these materials are shared between the two partners, so it's just one set of materials. to share among a pair. And then not included is the text that they'll read. So you will be selecting books, and each pair will need one book to share to read. And the bookworm is optional. And now, selecting appropriate texts is one of the most critical components to PAL. So it really requires some thought, because if the text, especially if it's too difficult, it's not going to lend to success with the student's reading. So you want to choose texts that are at the weaker reader's level, generally. And a good rule of thumb is no more than 10 errors per 100 words, or one error per 10 words. That's a pretty good indicator that a text is right at their instructional level. They're making some mistakes, but not so many that it'll be frustrating to read. Now, that text would then likely be at the independent level of the stronger reader. But again, since there won't be such a big difference between readers, the text should be appropriate. Kids can still benefit from reading text that's at their independent level. And then each pair can be reading from different texts. So within the pair, the students read the same text. So my partner and I would be reading one book, but then the pair next to us would be reading a completely different text. So everybody can be reading from a different book. And Teresa asks, can you use the Lexile scores associated with CBM measure to determine the level of text for each pair? And yes, that's a great way to do that. So any sort of leveling device that you have at your fingertips, whether it's Lexile scores, other kinds of leveled texts are great. That's just one more piece of information that can certainly be helpful. And then beyond that, I would consider the students' interests, and, you know, it's nice to give kids some choice if that's possible. That can be really motivating to them as well. The Basil story. Yes, so it might be okay to use a Basil text, so I'm assuming you're thinking of a part of the curriculum that all students are reading from. I guess my hesitation with that is, especially for kids who are reading at a much different level than the rest of the class, that if it's too difficult for those students, I would still be looking for something that they're likely to be more successful with. So maybe overall kids could be reading from the Basil, but for those who are really going to struggle with it, I would try to find some more differentiated text. And I'll talk more about using the same text in just a second. But here are some kinds of texts that teachers have used. Age-appropriate materials, of course, we always want to do that. Leveled text, so if you have texts that come with your curriculum or you have a leveled library or media center, that's good. Chapter books, young adult fiction is good if you have older kids. Also with older students, high interest, low vocabulary text, so there are some nice selections of those on the market if you happen to be working with older readers. Popular magazines. I've worked in schools where they use, like, the National Geographic Kids. They like to do that. Career-related texts, expository texts, content area materials, news articles. So really, pretty much any kind of text could be used during PALS. And if you are reading the same text, to get back to the Basil point, what I would say is assign pages ahead of time so students know what to read and so you can keep the whole class together. It maybe review vocabulary words before they begin reading. So if you do have some diversity of background knowledge and vocabulary skill in the class, at least this can help get kids on somewhat of the same page. And I would select vocabulary words that are really key to understanding the text. It doesn't necessarily have to be all words that kids won't understand, but the ones that are really key to comprehending. So pre-teach those. And then you might want to have a plan for kids who finish the assigned reading ahead of time. You might have some other books on hand that are at the weaker readers level that they could choose to read if they finish before everybody else is done. So hopefully that gives you some idea of what to do with the same text. And then moving on to training students. And I have a question here. How would you apply PAL strategies during math as students work on word problems? So that's a really interesting question, one I don't think I've gotten before. I would say you could use some of the things that we do in PALs. I wouldn't necessarily have that be your PALs time, but certainly if they're working with a partner, one child could read the word problem and the other child could reread it. That would certainly help them just hear it a couple of times, and which might lead to better understanding of the word problem. You could also have them use the summarizing strategy. But I think, you know, there's probably certain things that you want them to focus on during word problem solving. So I think it's something you could sort of apply during math, but I wouldn't necessarily make that part of your PALS time. There actually is a PALS math version. I'm not really intimately familiar with it, but certainly if you're interested in using this peer-mediated approach to math, PALS math might be something to take a look at, and I'll be giving you a website at the end of this session so you can look at all the different PALS programs. But that's a good question. You know, I think at a minimum you could use the partner reading approach, and there's probably a way to kind of tweak the paragraph shrinking for kids to glean the keywords and things that they're looking for in solving math problems. Now on this slide, I am showing you the 12-day training sequence. So if you have the manual, or if you purchase it or somehow obtain it, you can find this in there. And this kind of describes how you would introduce PALS to your students. So there are 12 training lessons that are generally implemented across 4 weeks. And you can see what kids are exposed to in each lesson. So in day one, they learn about PALS. And really, that's just an introduction where they learn about PALS jobs of coach and reader, how to work in a pair. They learn about the teams and team points. If you're going to have them move, you can teach them to move. So it's really just an introduction. And then after that, they learn about the PALS materials, how to do partner reading, and they have time to practice that. On day three, they have even more practice time, and they learn about correction procedures, how to know when your partner makes a mistake and how to correct that. And so you can see each day kind of builds on the previous day, where we're adding a new activity or we're just practicing what was learned the day before. So on day four, we add retell. We have a day of practice. On day six, we learn paragraph shrinking. Then we have practice. And so across those 12 days, by the end of it, they will have learned all of the different activities and how to do those. So the idea with the training is really to spend the time you need to get students to understand how to use the PAL strategies and get them pretty, they don't have to be perfect. It does take some time, and PALs might feel a little different for a while. But this training sequence really helps you guide your students through learning everything so that you can do PALs with fidelity. Once you've trained your students, your main job, or whoever is the teacher in the classroom, is going to be monitoring. So by monitoring, I just mean walking around the room and listening to students as they read. And really, this is a very important job. You don't want to be just reading the newspaper or grading papers. You're really still an active part of the process. And what you would be doing during that time is watching to see if students are following the routines. Do they know the PALS procedures? If you see that they're skipping parts of the routines or not quite sure how to do them, that's a good indicator that maybe you should reteach how to do that particular routine. Listen for the feedback they give to each other. Are they being helpful and kind in their feedback? Or are they being sort of snarky, and does that need to be corrected? Or are they really truly helping their partners? So you can listen for that. If you need to, you can reteach good helping behaviors, have kids who are doing a really good job model what they're doing, so that kids can really do a good job of the coaching piece. You'll also want to listen to how strong their main idea statements are and their retellings. So when I am a monitor during PALS, I like to spend a good couple of minutes with each pair and really listen to them read and see whether they're coming up with good main idea statements. It gives you a lot of really good information, actually, just to stop and listen to kids for a while. And then listen for good predictions. When you get to prediction relay, are they making predictions that aren't necessarily all the way to the end of the book, but just kind of thinking all along about what's going to happen next? So those are some of the things. And there is a reference card in the manual that kind of guides you through each activity and what to be listening for and watching for as you're monitoring. All right. So that's about all that I have for today, although I would be very happy to answer additional questions. What I was thinking of as next steps between now and our session in 2 weeks is that if you haven't obtained a manual, to go ahead and get one if you can, and start taking a look at that. They are available at the website that I have posted here. And when you have the manual, just take some time. You'll see very quickly that it kind of lays out a lot of the information that I've already shared. There are scripts where what the teacher says is in bold, and there's student responses, there's materials for training. The manual is designed not so much for you to have to read verbatim, because you can certainly deliver the lessons in your own words, but to really be kind of a self-contained teaching tool. So you should have everything that you need to implement PALS other than the books and the students. And then start thinking about your student pairs. So gather whatever reading data you have available, do that rank ordering, and figure out who your good pairs are going to be. Start thinking about how the classroom would be organized, where kids are going to sit, what you might put on the walls. The book is called, it's actually on one of the earlier slides, so I'll go back there in just a minute, but it's basically PALS for reading in grades 2 through 6. Pair your students, organize your classroom, select the text that you're going to use, and then also I'll be sending out a little Google survey, it'll come in your email, I think it will come from Molly. But that survey will just be a chance for you to share any questions that you have so far that you'd like to be addressed in the next session. So we'll do that a few days before the October 19th session so that I can try to incorporate those questions into the next webinar. And then you can join us on October 19th. So I'll go back to the beginning, and I don't know if there's a quicker way to get there. Bear with me for a moment. Oops. Okay, so the title of the book is right here. So Peer Assisted Learning Strategies, Reading Methods for Grades 2 through 6, 2008 Revised Edition. You can get that at the website that I gave you the link to. Actually, you'll get that link actually gets you right to the order form. There is a DVD that goes along with it that has materials that you can print directly, so you don't have to make copies if you get the DVD. And I will just wait for any questions. So it looks like there will be a raffle of 5 grades 2 through 6 manuals. Very nice. Well, thank you very much, and I look forward to talking with you all in a couple of weeks.